raising the speed limit on the information superhighway. TalkZone.com.
TalkZone.com.
Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News.
Hi, I'm Hub Arkish, and along with Jim Clemens and Mike Wilkening, it is our pleasure to bring you this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News, where every week we bring you all the news, scoops, and rumors before they happen from the NFL, the NBA, and college hoops as well.
We take a closer look at the NBA playoff picture, plus what might the Rams do with the number one pick.
It's all just ahead on Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News.
Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News.
Thank you so much, everybody, for joining us for another edition of Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News this week. I'm Hub Arkish, the publisher and editor. Our senior editor, Mike Wilkening, is alongside, as is our co-host throughout the basketball season, Jim Clemens, assistant coach of the LA Lakers, and a regular guest. We try and get him every week because there is no better place in the world for inside information on the NBA than hoopsworld.com. You want to get there 24/7 on the web, and Steve Kyler is the publisher. And Jim, I want to start with you this week, and we'll talk about your Lakers in a few minutes, but you wrapped up a five-game tough road trip in Atlanta, and boy, the Hawks look good, and they seem to continually fly under the radar in the East. Everybody talks about the big three. Does that Hawks team look like a team to you that's finally ready to take another step in the playoffs?
I tell you, Hub, they play extremely well at least once a year. We haven't won in Atlanta in about 4 years now, and they just have our number. But they had pop in their step. They executed well. They had solid contribution from their bench. And they looked like they were ready to take their game to another level. So give them their kudos. I think 9 straight at home for them now. And, yeah, we limped home last night.
You know, Steve, we spend so much time on the West, and the East has been the poor sister all year long. Everybody knows about the Cavs and the Magic, and the Celtics, if they're healthy, certainly are going to cause trouble for people. Now you got the Hawks, and the Miami Heat are hot, having won 6 straight. The Bucks have been hot, but this Heat team, is this the real deal, or what's going on there that they've suddenly found their rhythm?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. The first being, you know, when you've got Dwayne Wade, it's kind of like coach with Kobe Bryant. Every game is basically down to a coin flip. If Dwayne shows up and plays the way that he can play, he can carry a team all by himself. But I think a couple of things that are really starting to break Miami's way, they're getting better production, consistent production out of guys like Michael Beasley and Udonis Haslam. And, you know, and I think that probably the least talked about acquisition in the offseason has been Quentin Richardson. He's done such a good job for him. He's got great chemistry with Dwayne Wade, and they really are playing some very good basketball right now. But, you know, it was funny, just a couple of weeks ago, Eric Spoelstra, their head coach, you know, said it was going to be a heavyweight fight down the stretch. And it was going to be the guys that showed up ready to fight each night would be the guys that play. And you're starting to see that those are the guys that are getting the lion's share of the minutes. And that's really why the Heat are kind of rolling right now.
You know, Jimmy, the West is competitive as ever. You've got teams bunched a game and a half apart between 2 and 7, I believe. But you look at the East, and there's so much focus on the competitiveness in the West that I have to ask you, are some of these East teams a little underrated in your mind?
I absolutely like the way Milwaukee has played prior to the trade. I thought that they were very focused, and if Boga didn't get hurt last year, I think they would have made a bigger splash in the playoff run. But his ability to stay on the floor this year and stay healthy has done exceptionally well for them. And I do believe that a lot of the notoriety in the press is covering the West. But the thing is, I think there is good basketball being played in the East, and I think we're going to see it here by the end of the season once again, because I think their last two spots are going to come down to dogfights.
Steve, how much do Magic fans have to worry about the injury to Vince Carter, and tell us about Michael Petras as well?
Well, it's an ankle for Michael Petras. It's a sprained big toe for Vince. You know, the word is, you know, if these were playoff games, these guys would tough through it. But, you know, no team wants to try to force a minor injury and create a major injury. So, you know, both of those guys are likely going to see limited to no minutes here over the next couple of couple of games probably the next week or so. And that really just means, you know, Orlando gets to use some of its depth again. You know, when Vince went out, they leaned on J.J. Redick. He gave a career high in minutes and put up 23 points. I think it was 7 rebounds, 6 assists. It was almost a perfect game from J.J. So they've got some guys that really have not seen a lot of playing time, the Ryan Andersons, the Brandon Basses. You know, and I always look at these opportunities with little injuries to get the guys into a rhythm coming into the postseason, because you just never know how the postseason's going to go. So having a couple of games before, you know, getting into the first round to get some of those guys some real meaningful minutes and some tough minutes, I think is going to just be better for Orlando. And then you're going to get Pietras and Vince back probably for the last couple of regular season games for tune-up and get into the postseason run.
Hey, Wilkie, I just happened to be in New Jersey on business Monday and Tuesday this past week and sat in a hotel lounge Monday night and watched the New Jersey Nets get their 10th win of the year over the San Antonio Spurs. I think calling the Nets hot would be a bit of an exaggeration, but these last 4 wins have come a lot more quickly. This is a team that's starting to, well, at least show flashes of maybe having some things to build with.
Right. You know, I think that's the key point. I think you start, obviously, you have to look towards next season with these guys. That's been the key, you know, since the beginning of the season with the Nets. But you like the way they finished the season. There are pieces to build upon. I'm a big Devin Harris fan. I tend to think that going forward, he has a very bright future. Obviously, they're going to have a high lottery pick. So you're going to have an opportunity to do some things there, and you're going to have a chance to spend in free agency and maybe turn this around. And again, we talk about the East being a little bit bunched in the middle. Some people will call that competitiveness. In some cases, that may be an indication to me that, you know, you can maybe move up the ranks a little bit quicker in this conference than certainly the West. So to me, they're not a lost cause at this point, and the way they've ended this season is certainly a good sign.
All right, guys, I'm going to ask everybody to hang on just a minute. We've got a lot more NBA Way We Hear It coming up on the other side of these quick commercial words. Barkish, Jimmy Clemens, Mike Wilkening, along with our guest Steve Kyler of HoopsWorld.com with more NBA Way We Hear It for y'all. And before we wrap up on the East, Steve, I'll start with you. The Bulls and the Raptors late this week were separated by 2 games for the final playoff spot with 7 to play. Neither team playing very well, quite frankly, the last month or so of the season. Neither team figures to give, you know, much of a challenge to the Cleveland Cavaliers, who will certainly be the first round matchup for whichever team claims that spot. But, you know, any idea, either of these teams you think have the ability to maybe win their way into the playoffs instead of kind of struggling along?
Well, I think it's just really the 2-game gap between both teams. You know, Chicago's back 2 games, I think, is ultimately going to be the deciding factor. I don't know that either team is going to get on a surge or kind of, you know, take a run here in the last week or so of the regular season. You know, Toronto's probably the team that has the most questions going for it. You know, the Hedo Turkoglu situation, where they're now benching him after signing him to a 5-year, $53 million deal. You know, he's now a reserve. They're questioning each other's motivations. A lot of people are looking at Chris Bosh and saying, you know, his numbers over the last month have been, you know, as low as they've been all season. Is he starting to check out? There's just a lot of questions about Toronto that probably makes them a little more suspect than Chicago. You know, Chicago is fighting, but, you know, this is a team that really is kind of looking forward a little more than maybe they'll publicly admit. You know, they make the move to move out John Salmon so they can have a lot of cap space for 2010. I think in Chicago, it's really, if we can get into the playoffs, that's a good thing, but I don't necessarily know that they have all the horses, especially with Lou Aldang being injured and still trying to figure out how to get a rhythm together here in the last few weeks of the season. I just don't know that they've got the horses to get it done.
Jim, I got to talk to you a little bit about your L.A. Lakers. Rough road trip, not horrible, 2-3 on a 5-game swing, but a couple games that didn't look good. And I just wonder about your ball club. With all the battling going on right behind you and that 4-5-6 game cushion being pretty consistent the whole second half of the season, does your team need to be challenged a little bit more than they are by the competition?
Well, we are being challenged. You know, look at the road trip alone says that, Hub. We went into Oklahoma City and played a very good up-and-coming Oklahoma City team, and it really wasn't a competitive game after the jump ball of first quarter. You know, what we've been trying to tell our guys all year long, you are the defending champion. And then 2 nights later, we go down to New Orleans and They'd lost 8 out of 10, but once again, they had a rousing crowd. The crowd got behind them, and they fed off their energy. And so we have to realize, once again, that this is the price you pay when you're the defending champion. You get the other team's best shot. And so we've got to, you know, meet that challenge every night. In the last week or two, we certainly haven't done that.
Steve, I mentioned sitting in a bar in Jersey the other night, actually watching the Spurs get knocked off by the Nets. But they had been playing a little better basketball, you know, and you worry with them again about health, the status on Tony Parker's hand. Manu Ginobili having maybe his best year when healthy, but the guy keeps getting nicked up. Can this team, are they just too old, or can this team be another force again in the playoffs?
You know, in Hub every week we talk about, you know, is this the time when the Spurs are going to fall off? And, you know, I keep saying I'll never bet against Tim Duncan and Greg Popovich in the series. I'm just not going to do it. But again, you're talking about at this point, the Spurs are the 8th seed in the West. They're going to face the Lakers, and I don't think it gets done. I think there's a game in the Spurs, absolutely, but it really seems like this team shows up competitively, you know, 2 out of every 3, and they're going to give away a game here and there just because of how they kind of approach the game. And, you know, that might change in the postseason, but the way they've played as of late, they just don't seem like they're a team that's going to put together a run and really make things interesting. And the fact that, as it stands today, they're going to have to face the Lakers in the first round, I think they're going to be a first-round exit. I think they could get a game, but I don't think they're going to get a contest.
All right, but Jimmy, a little bit of trick question for you here. It's not tricky for you, but since this is the media, you know, we've got to be careful. Of all the teams you could see in the first round, does the fact that you got to face a team potentially with 3 or 4 rings trouble you a little bit?
Well, Rudy Tom Johnson said a number of years ago, don't underestimate the heart of a champion. And I think Ginobili and Parker certainly know how to win, but I've really been impressed of late with the Hill kid at the guard spot. He's just coming on blazing guns, so he'll give them, once again, some additional energy. They're playing, Ginobili is playing out of his gourd right now. He's having a wonderful year. And the thing is that they have this thing against us as a team, and we've got to reconcile with that. Otherwise, we could be the early out.
Steve, I've just got about 30 seconds left, but I've got to ask you, is it possible that the Minnesota Timberwolves are actually worse than the New Jersey Nets?
Absolutely worse than the New Jersey Nets. But again, it comes down to when you start ripping the team apart and when everything is about future flexibility and you're not playing your lottery pick type players. I mean, Kevin Love has been relegated to a bench role, and there aren't many times that you can be successful playing guys that weren't drafted. And, you know, for Minnesota, it's about trying to find a rhythm, trying to find some pieces that work. It's not necessarily about putting a lot of starting minutes in certain guys' hands. It's trying to figure out what you want to keep in the offseason, wherein with New Jersey, they're really getting their young guys they plan to keep, plan to develop and build around a lot of time, and you're seeing them getting better and better, wherein Minnesota is really becoming one of those teams that understands there's 2 more weeks till vacation, and I'm probably not going to be in Minnesota next year, and the body language on the floor and the way guys are handling themselves really shows that they're not interested in what's next in Minnesota. They're just interested in this thing being over.
Steve Kuyler, our regular guest each week from HoopsWorld.com. Check him out on the web. Steve, thank you so much. Jimmy, Mike Wilkening, hang on just a minute. We take a quick commercial break, and then there's still plenty of college hoops to talk on Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News. Welcome back, everybody. Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News as we switch from the NBA to college hoops. And it is our great pleasure to welcome in a guest. We actually got to visit with Fran McCaffrey just, about 3-4 weeks ago as he was preparing his Siena Saints for the tournament. And the success with that ball club has led to a new destination for Coach McCaffrey. So, Fran, first of all and foremost, congratulations. The new head coach of the Iowa Hawkeyes. You got to be thrilled about that.
Absolutely thrilled. It's been a crazy couple of days, as you can imagine, but it's been a lot of fun, wonderful people in Iowa City, and I'm really looking forward to the challenge.
You know, Fran, I think the obvious question that comes up first is, you know, going from, quote, mid-major to the Big Ten, we're sure that has a lot to do with it, but tell us all that goes into the decision to leave a place that you obviously love to go take on a bigger challenge.
I think anybody that gets into this profession is a competitor by nature, and, you know, I felt like when I got the Siena job, that was a place where I could just settle down and finish my career. Just quality people through and through, great fan base. I think if, you know, objectively can say the best job in the league. And you know, there's some folks out there that would say, well, why would he ever leave there? Well, I said publicly many times, the list of places that I would leave Siena for is very small. And I had been to Iowa's campus before. I had played in their tournament on two different occasions. I know what the facility is. I know the renovation that is going to be absolutely incredible. And I have a great affinity and appreciation for the Big Ten. And I think everybody hopes to one day maybe have an opportunity to coach, you know, in a BCS situation. And the Iowa people throughout the process were just incredibly professional. Gary Baugh, President Mason. So I think when you put it all together, it was a logical move. It's a move that excites me professionally. It's a move that makes great sense for my family in terms of where we're going to live. I have a young family, and I just can't wait to get started.
Well, Coach, you answered two of my questions right off the bat, one being facilities and the other one how you're going to adjust to Iowa City. So I've heard that, once again, they got a great and outstanding facilities program. Can you elaborate on that for us?
Sure thing. Carver Hawkeye was always a great place to play. But you know, over time, you know, certain places become a little bit dated, and others build newer facilities. And of course, I was going to always understand what we need and recognize that and go ahead and take care of it. We've got a $50 million renovation going, which will be a state-of-the-art practice facility, which will sit directly behind Carver Hawkeye, which will give us a weight room that is substantially better than what we have now. Offices, obviously the practice part of it, and then an entrance and you know, an entryway into the facility that is very impressive. And when you come into the building, if you've been there, you kind of come in and then go down to the court. Well, everything at the top of those stands will be different. It will look different. And it's just going to be a much more exciting and impressive venue, which will obviously help us in recruiting.
The Big Ten has the reputation of kind of being a deliberate sort of style of basketball. But you talked a little bit in your introductory press conference about picking up the tempo a little bit. Can you elaborate on the type of style of play you'd like to see the Hawkeyes play?
But, you know, it's the only style that I've ever employed. You know, I want to run. I want to run on makes and misses. I want to attack the rim. And I want to attack a split defense rather than a stack defense. I want to change defenses and try to create some offense with our defense, whether it be, you know, three-quarter court trap, you know, doing different things out of that, full court pressure, you know, trapping out of what we do half court, anything to disrupt rhythm, you know. And I think you're right. I mean, there's probably more adjustments made than maybe people are giving the league credit for. You know, I've watched Tubby Smith's teams. He does some different things. I know you got John Beilein with the 1-3-1, and Eddie DeCellis plays the 1-3-1, and Matt Motta was playing a little bit of matchup there. You know, they played matchup when they played us last year. You know, they pretty much stuck with it. So you're going to see a team in Iowa that's going to change defenses, constantly make adjustments. You know, we'll do some different things on offense, whether it be motion or sets, depending upon what we think will work, predicated on scouting. But all in all, we're going to try to be a transition-oriented team. And I think when you're, you know, a lot of people think you can't play that way, you know, initially. But to me, we have to try to figure out ways to get some easy baskets to take some pressure off our set offense.
Fran, you make the switch really at the only time that you can make a switch, and yet for the most part for coaches in situations like yours, the recruiting for the coming season is in the bank, at least the initial contact and the early excitement. How long do you envision it taking to be able to really make an impact on this program?
The first thing that has to happen is I have to see what my roster is going to look like. You know, I've re-recruited the players that are there, and I'm hopeful that they will all stay. So then I'll know exactly how many scholarships I have. We have four incoming recruits that signed with us. And of course I have to re-recruit them, actually begin the recruiting process. So, you know, then I'll see, are they all going to honor their commitments or do they want to go somewhere else? And so far my conversations and my meetings have been fantastic. And I'm hopeful that they will all stay. If that's the case, I have one scholarship. If anybody doesn't come back, then, you know, I obviously have two or three, and that will determine where we go. And I'll look at, what do we need position wise? But last year's team was a very young team. It was also a team that had not a lot of depth. So this year's team will look a little bit better in terms of experience. You know, assuming that, you know, we have an incoming class of four we'll be able to address some of the size issues. We weren't a big team. And I think at that point in time, I'll be able to assess what we can do this year, and we'll determine how quickly I think we can become a serious contender in a great conference. But I think the important thing that we have to look for in the short run is to make improvement. You know, how do you define improvement in the short run? Well, we just have to be better than we were last year. We have to have more enthusiasm in the building. You know, obviously, it's a bottom-line oriented business. People, you're going to look at it and say, well, you won 10 games last year. You got to win more than 10 games. And at some level, maybe that's what we have to do. But I think the fans in Iowa City and our athletic director, Gary Barter, are a little more sophisticated than that. They'll be able to determine, you know, how is this team being coached? How are they recruiting? What kind of talent are they bringing in? How are these young kids developing, both the ones that were here last year and the ones that were brought in this year? So I feel like, without question, I should be expected to show improvement and then have that be gradual over time to where we build a contender.
Well, Fran, you've always been very generous with your time with us. We wish you nothing but the best at Iowa, and hopefully that transition will happen real quick for you.
Thanks so much, guys. Look forward to talking to you again.
Visiting with Fran McCaffrey, the brand-new coach of the Iowa Hawkeyes. We take a quick commercial break, and then we're back with more college hoops on Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News. And we have not forgotten that it's Final Four weekend. Jim Clemens, Mike Wilkening, and Hub Arkish. And Jim, I turn to you first, and I know that you've had to focus on the guys who get paid every night, but nonetheless an exciting time. And we've got Cinderella at the dance. The first game Saturday will be Butler versus Michigan State. And I got to tell you, Tom Izzo, I don't know how you don't marvel at what the guy does. To lose Kalen Lucas and then come out and win two games to get to the Final Four, really impressive coaching job. And you look at this Butler team, and you can call them a mid-major if you want, but they've got top 20, top 10 type talent.
They are well coached. They've been through the battles all year. And in fact, you know, Butler's been a top program for a number of years. So, and the kids stay in the program. So what you have is a veteran team who understands how to play, and you got a extremely well-coached Michigan State game team. So I think that's going to be a very exciting game, and arguably you're going to have a Butler crowd. So if they can weather Michigan State's pressure and play their game, I think it's going to be the most exciting game of the two.
Hey, Mike, real quickly before we get to the other game, why would you guess Brad Stevens' name hasn't come up more for some of these other jobs that are open?
I think he will. I mean, I just think it's sort of a matter of timing, but I mean, he has a nice deal with Butler, if I recall correctly, but I would think he's a guy that's certainly going forward, given how young he is going to be someone that's going to be in the mix for these jobs. And one other real quick thing about this team, you know, they start one senior, a junior, and three sophomores. The feeling was that this was a team that really next year was supposed to sort of come to hand and really be a Final Four type team. The best may yet to be to come for this team. It's very, I mean, this is going to be an exciting couple of years here for Butler.
Well, and of course, Butler, very exciting. Michigan State, a great story. But let's face it, guys, the show ponies come out in the night game. You've got a West Virginia team that won the Big East Conference and is arguably playing the best basketball in the tournament after knocking off Kentucky. And a Duke team who, Jimmy, people continue to underrate them and say, well, they're a little soft this year, but here they are in the Final Four.
Well, I was very impressed in their regional final game against a very well-coached team from Baylor. I just thought that at the end, Baylor couldn't save a deal, and Duke's poise and ability to knock down shots and to continue playing showed they were battle-tested for this assignment, and I think we're going to see a good and well-played game, but I think it's going to be very interesting coming down the stretch.
And you know, Jimmy, it's funny you make that analogy, or I'll ask you this, Wilkie. We've got to get out pretty quickly, but you watch the two games, and with Duke and Baylor, as much as Baylor kept pushing, I never felt like that one was going to get away from Duke, and yet I watched a similar situation with West Virginia and Kentucky, where West Virginia was up by a dozen or so the last 3 minutes, and you really feared it was going to get away as they kept going to the free throw line and missing the front ends of those one-on-ones.
Right. I think for West Virginia, they're going to have to play Perhaps their best defense of the year, I think, to win this game. Duke has, a distinct edge offensively. And to me, guys, the job that Mike Krzyzewski's done this year coaching, I know that they don't get a ton of credit because they're Duke. They're expected to win. But I look at the skill development of those guys. You look at John Shire, the way he handles the ball. He's been a great kind of combo type guard. Nolan Smith, the way he's played. The big guys, the way they developed. The way this Duke team is sort of come to the fore as well, I think is very, very impressive. I think they've got an edge over West Virginia here, and West Virginia is really going to have to play, and they're great defensively, but they're going to have to take it to another level here, I think, to win that game.
And Jimmy, real quickly in that game, the two things, nobody gives Duke enough credit for the way they play defense, and they're playing it well this year. And on the other side, Sam Mazzullo is a nice story for West Virginia. Chuck Bryant's probably not going to go, but they still don't handle the ball well out on the point.
Well, I think in guard play is going to speak volumes about who ultimately wins this game, and as well as the ability to knock down some outside shots. And I see West Virginia as being more of a drive-oriented team, and even though they can make shots on occasion, I think Duke has more consistency.
All right, guys, we've got to talk a little football. That's going to do it for the basketball segment of the show. Jimmy, good luck this week. We will talk to you next week on the NBA trail. Wilkie and I are back with NFL Way We Hear It in just a moment. We're back on Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News, and we make the transition from the hard court to the gridiron. It's NFL Way We Hear It, and we start with senior editor at Pro Football Weekly, Eric Edholm. Eric, amongst the teams on his beat, covers the NFC East and the Philadelphia Eagles, and the trade talks surrounding, I'm going to say, Eagles quarterbacks, probably Donovan McNabb, but now rumors that maybe even Kevin Kolb could go for the right price. But it seems, Eric, that the Eagles are determined to deal a quarterback and to get a high pick in this draft. Tell us what the latest is that you're hearing.
Well, as you know, they have sort of unusual depth, and Andy Reid talked about this at the NFL spring meetings. They've got three guys, I think, who, you know, obviously have started NFL games before, project very well in certain circumstances. And, you know, you have Donovan McNabb, who's been the leader of this team for the last decade, and then you have Kevin Kolb, who's widely regarded as the successor. Now, is that plan in place? Is Kolb going to be the starting quarterback next year? The signs are pointing in that direction. You know, I've talked to people from both sides of the coin here. I've talked to people with the Eagles organization. I've talked to people in McNabb's camp. It appears as if something's going to get done, and the Oakland Raiders are kind of at the forefront, although the fact that no deal has happened to this point opens up the field. There is a possibility another team such as the Buffalo Bills, just throwing it out there, could get involved. So, you know, McNabb is the more likely of the two to get traded, Hub, even though Cobb's value might be higher. So it's a question of, do you feel like you're getting robbed with a second-round pick for McNabb, or do you want to shoot for the moon and maybe get a little more immediate value for a guy like Kolb?
And, Eric, here's the thing that continues to trouble me about this. Little piece of trivia for everybody. There's only three quarterbacks in the NFL who have quarterbacked their team to at least four title games and one Super Bowl, or in the case of McNabb, five title games, and their names are Manning, Brady, and McNabb. And the bottom line is, you can like Kevin Kolb all you want, but McNabb is only 33, soon to be 34 years old. Why are they so convinced that they're sure they've got the next one when they're so hard to find the first one?
Yeah, and it's the same age range as Peyton Manning and Tom Brady. So, I mean, you know, I think people feel like McNabb is older than his actual physical age because, you know, look, he's had a number of injuries, and people don't feel like they can count on him at this point for 16 games. So, yeah, I mean, your point is very well taken because, you know, this guy's been a winner, but for some reason that marriage with Philadelphia has never quite been there. I don't know if it'll be there for any quarterback in that city, but, you know, it's been kind of a love-hate thing, and you know, he's never been fully recognized, and I think the Eagles might be saying, you know what, it just might be time to cut the cord.
All right, Eric, thank you so much. We now hand it off to our associate editor, Michael Blunda. And Mike's got a couple teams out in the AFC West. The Kansas City Chiefs in particular, Michael, are in an interesting spot. One of the most coveted players in this draft is safety Eric Berry out of Tennessee. It now looks like he could slide to the Chiefs. There are teams behind them at 6 and 7 who would love to have him. What are you hearing about the Chiefs' plans for this draft?
Well, the Chiefs obviously need a lot of help at safety. That was one of their weakest positions last year. And right now they're really weighing the pros and cons of whether they should use that fifth pick on Eric Berry. You know, that's a high spot for safeties to be taken in the draft. Oftentimes they'll slip because it's just seen as a position that's not valued as much as others, maybe not worth as much money that, you know, a number five overall player would get. So the Chiefs are definitely weighing whether or not they should take Eric Berry there. But they feel if, you know, if they determine he could be a future star in the pros, which a lot of people think he could be, they wouldn't hesitate to pull the trigger on him.
Michael, they drafted Brandon Elbert a couple years ago to be their left tackle. That hasn't definitely worked out. They haven't written it off. They're looking at offensive line, though, is the other option at number five?
Right. If they don't go with Barry at five, it's likely that they'll probably take an offensive tackle. They have the option to, you know, install that new player at the left tackle position, possibly flip Brandon Elbert over to right tackle since they brought in some guard help this offseason. So if it's not Barry at number five, it's likely to be whoever the top offensive tackle remaining on the board is.
All right, Michael, thank you. We're going to hand the mic off now to executive editor Dan Arkish. And, Dan, we've got a couple teams I want to talk to you about. But first, the Chicago Bears have not announced officially that they've traded defensive end Alex Brown. They haven't cut him. And yet they leaked to the media last week that he was going to be moving on one way or the other. Brown, on his own Twitter account, has already said thank you and goodbye to the Chicago Bears. And what Bears fans everywhere are asking is, what the hell are these guys thinking?
Yeah, by all accounts, he should be history for the Bears by the time this show is heard in most places. And, you know, a lot of team insiders just wonder, you know, about the wisdom of replacing a very solid player, steady guy who had at least six sacks in five of the 6 years, with basically a combination of Mark Anderson, who had a great rookie season but has been questionable since then, and Israel Adonijé, who previously was a swingman. And so, you know, you just have to wonder if they're being penny wise and dollar foolish. I mean, Brown did have a big contract, $5 million, but he was a good player and also very good in the locker room.
Alex Brown, one of the best run-defending defensive ends in the NFL. A bit of a disappointment in sack totals at the defensive end position, but as Dan says, also a key guy in the Bears' locker room. We've got more Way We Hear It. Dan will be back with us with the Rams in just a moment, but first we take this quick commercial break. We roll on with National Football League Way We Hear It here on Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News, and we're visiting with the executive editor at PFW, Dan Arkish. And Dan, the St. Louis Rams hold the key to the NFL draft this year. That would be that first overall pick. And after several months of people working on the assumption that their choice was between Ndamukong Suh and Gerald McCoy, a spectacular pro day by Sam Bradford is starting to make it look like the Rams may be forced to focus on the quarterback position?
I would have to think that, Hub. It's all good for Bradford. I mean, he had an outstanding pro day. I mean, there was only one pass dropped, and it was just dropped. I mean, there were good throws. The receiver dropped the ball. His arm looked strong. He actually got stronger as the workout wore on. And there's a couple of other interesting points. At the Combine, Rams GM Billy Devaney had mentioned that they were going to have an independent third party, a neutral doctor, check out Bradford's surgically repaired throwing shoulder. Well, now they've scratched those plans because they're so convinced that that shoulder is healthy. So it's really looking good for him. There's one more workout that the Rams want to put him through. You know, the one thing about this workout that he just went through, he was able to script it and the workout that the Rams have in mind 3 days before the draft, there won't be a script. He won't see an advanced copy, so it's going to be a little more arbitrary.
Now, Dan, didn't I also read that they're planning on bringing in Colt McCoy for a workout?
Actually, the Rams are going to have him in for a workout April. They've scheduled a private workout for him in Texas April 8th. They did not attend his pro day, though.
Well, and here's where it gets interesting, guys, is we hear about teams wanting to trade down on these top five picks constantly because of the cost, particularly in this year of uncertainty with the collective bargaining agreement, and yet nobody wants to trade up. But now, Dan, suddenly if you've got a healthy franchise quarterback at number one, nobody thought the number two pick was going to get a choice between Sue and McCoy, and one of them now available at three, doesn't this also start to at least stoke the trade market a little bit?
Well, yeah, I think the rumors are going to, you know, be hot and heavy right up until draft day, and there are teams lurking in the woods like the Redskins at number four that might be looking to move up because Bradford just did have such an outstanding workout. So I think they're going to hold out their options, but I think it's also really looking good for Bradford in St. Louis because I think the new ownership, whoever is going to be the new owner, they really, you know, need that big headline guy, and Bradford would fill the bill nicely.
Well, and actually, let's add very quickly, we thought that the new ownership was a done deal, and now suddenly there are potential problems on the horizon there?
Yeah, Shahid Khan, I mean, everybody, all the owners say he's a great guy. They really liked him. But apparently his finances, his financial situation is a little bit murky. He's had some dealings with the IRS that the ownership, the league ownership has some questions about. So all of a sudden, it's not a slam dunk by any means that Shahid Khan is the guy.
All right, Dan, thank you very much. I now bring back our senior editor, Mike Wilkening. And Mike, the Pittsburgh Steelers, I don't want to talk about Ben Roethlisberger every week, particularly when there's no new news. And what we can report is there's no new news out of Milledgeville, Georgia, or the Georgia Bureau of Investigation. The case is ongoing. He still hasn't spoken to the investigators. We'll keep up with that when new news breaks. But it's a bigger picture with the Steelers organization now, and now the problems of Santonio Holmes down in Florida, which, again, may be much ado about nothing, but Holmes is no stranger to the headlines.
Right. And again, the story at issue here is that there's been a lawsuit filed against Santonio Holmes alleging that he threw a glass at a woman in an Orlando nightclub. He has denied that. There's a police report. There's conflicting reports as to what allegedly had happened there, with the police report reportedly kind of maybe telling a different story. But, you know, again, Hub, I think you've hit on the right point here. The Steelers organization, the name is sort of being, dragged through the mud here a little bit. Embarrassed, I think the organization is at this point. It certainly has not been a good offseason for the Steelers, all things considered.
Well, and last year, the first full season that the patriarch of the family, Dan Rooney, was away. He is now the U.S. ambassador to Ireland, and I'm not pointing fingers and saying that's anything to do with it, but it's certainly something you have to consider. As the next generation takes over, a few problems have creeped into the situation. We take our last commercial break, but we've still got the publisher's pen ahead. Stick around. More sports for you on Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News.
The publisher's pen with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arch.
All right, Michael. Now, I try not to get personal with these things. I try not to lose my editorial focus. I try not to be biased. But this week, I've got to plead the case, not only for myself, but for everybody I know who has been watching this NCAA basketball tournament. Everything I read, everything I hear, everywhere we look, everybody talking about maybe one of the best tournaments of all time, that this has been the perfect situation, that you've had the low seeds do the Cinderella stories. You've had the mid-majors with some of the mid-seeds, including a Butler team in the Final Four, give you no end of excitement. And yet you've still got the guys at the top, the Dukes, the West Virginias, certainly Kentucky at least got to the Elite Eight, that it's been the right balance. Everything is working in this tournament. Obviously, 65 teams is the answer. And then we hear more statements like the one from Big Ten Commissioner Jim Delaney just the other day in saying expansion of the tournament is probable and possibly imminent. And we ask ourselves why. Well, that part is easy to answer. The NCAA is in a window right now where they've got a few more months to opt out of the last 3 years of their television agreement with CBS. We know that they've already talked to ESPN and others, that the bidding will go up, that there will be more money at play here, and the only way to get more money is to have more games. But why pay for more bad games? And that's what we're going to get. Listen, it may be okay. It may not destroy the tournament. But when you've got something that is almost perfect, people raving about it everywhere, why would you make such a radical change right now? Don't do it, guys. Don't ruin one of the best sporting events in the country. That's going to do it for this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News. Our thanks to Fran McCaffrey, the new head coach of the Iowa Hawkeyes, for stopping by. Steve Kyler of HoopsWorld.com stopped by again. Thank you, Steve. Randy Myers does such a great job every week of producing and engineering. And Syndication Networks, our home studio. Thank you so much to you all. But most of all, thanks to all of our listeners. We look forward to visiting with you again next week, same time, same station, on Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News.